Thank you for listening to Ivy Podcast, where we feature weekly leadership conversations with thought leaders and industry experts. Now, here is your host, Cesar Romero.
Amanda, thank you so much for joining us today on the Ivy Podcast. I'm particularly excited for this episode, diving deeper into your background, making the leap from consulting to CEO, and share your message, especially with our female executive audience that might be looking for some, either inspiration or a story that they can relate to. And I'm excited. So thanks so much for making the time for us today.
Thanks for having me, Cesar. I'm looking forward to the conversation.
All right. So to kick us off, let's set the stage. So tell us a bit more about Zelius. What do you currently do at Zelius? And I guess what makes Zelius stand out from other similar companies in healthcare?
Sure. So I am the CEO of Zelius. We are the leading healthcare payments company. We use technology to price, pay, and explain healthcare and create better outcomes and experiences for the payer, the provider, and the healthcare consumer. And we really pride ourselves on a couple of things in that. Number one, using technology. So this is an industry where I think we all fundamentally believe that technology can make such a difference in the experience. And two, we intentionally choose to say we want to sit in the middle of all three constituents of the payer, the provider, and the healthcare consumer and find solutions, because we believe that is the only way that we're really going to make healthcare better for everyone.
I want to talk about healthcare. I went on your LinkedIn profile and I noticed that you published a thought leadership piece for 2022. I think it was your first article. And in there, you mentioned a few things in terms of trends and in terms of what we need to change in healthcare. And I wanted to ask you more about that. What do you think, from your perspective, from your experience, what are some of the changes that we need to make to improve the overall U.S. healthcare system? Because as we all know, right, it's not the best in the world, but it could be if you wanted to. So I wanted to get your perspective on that.
Yeah. So first and foremost, I think we need to look for what I call win-win-win solutions. So for all three constituents, payers, providers, and members, if we're actually going to make healthcare better. So I'll give you an example of a win-win that we do. One of the big elements of our business is we take paper checks and we make them electronic. So this is really crazy to most people. It was crazy to me when I first got into the industry,
right,
but it's still 30% of payments that go between payers and providers go by paper check. So that's about $500 billion of healthcare spend that goes by paper check. And you say, well, my gosh, that's totally inefficient. It costs money to print checks. It has to go in the mail. It can get lost in the mail. It doesn't come with the data that says what that check is for. And so one of the things that Zelius does is uses technology and sits in the middle of a two-sided network and says, okay, providers, for those paper checks, for what is generally your long tail of a lot of payments from payers, we'll turn that electronic for you. And we'll do it at a cost that is so much lower than what you would spend if you were doing it the old-fashioned way of receiving a check. And then for the payer, they get the opportunity as well of saying, well, we're not going to spend money on checks anymore. And we're going to know that money that we owe our providers is getting there. And so that, to me, that's a great example of how you use technology to make healthcare better for both sides. We talk about the fact that at Zelius, our goal is to pay for care with care. And what's implied in that is we want to take the burden of payments off of the system so that everybody involved can focus back on care, which really should be at the center of healthcare.
Yeah, it should be. It should be, right. Care. At the end of the day, it's about caring. And 30%. Wow. As someone that I'm used to sending my payments electronically, you know, sometimes you forget that not everybody has the same access, right, to the tools and technology sometimes. So that's wild. That's crazy. In terms of the growth opportunities, let's say in the next 5 years, you know, where do you see, you know, some of the biggest trends or the biggest opportunities in healthcare, you know, as we look into the near future?
You know, one of the ones that we're most excited about at Zelis is what we call member empowerment. So I explain it simply to folks that aren't in healthcare. Look at all of the advancements that we've had in every other industry about how we shop, about how we look for what we need, about how we have it delivered to us. I mean, if you just think about the fact now that, you know, to go online or to shop for anything, you go online, you type in a few words, you press a button and it shows up at your door.
Right.
That's pretty incredible. And that is what we've gotten used to as consumers. And so I give that example and I say, imagine if we could just bring even 20% of that advancement to healthcare, how different of an experience you would have. Imagine if you could say, I mean, take me for example, I changed into this job. I changed to a new healthcare payer. I'm going through this process of saying, well, gosh, I need to reconsider. Are my doctors in network or not? Mm-hmm. Who should I be using? What should I be using for my kids' care that is changing? Imagine if you could go online, shop for that, get accurate information about what it would cost, schedule, get an explanation back to you that actually made sense about the healthcare that you used, and be able to pay for it all in a really simple way. Those are the sort of advancements that I get really, really excited about. We get excited about at Zelis and saying, gosh, the future is so clear about what we could do. Let's go after that and bring it to market.
I got goosebumps because, yeah, like all of that, please. We need to make
it. We do. We deserve it.
Yeah. And as speaking from, I guess, from a consumer perspective, I wish there comes a time where our healthcare is not tied to our full-time jobs.
Yeah.
Because it creates a burden for most people, in a way that I know some of my friends and some colleagues I know, their main reason that they're in the job is because I have healthcare, right? So I'm betting on a future where we're able to choose healthcare, but not because of our jobs, but because, hey, this is what's best for me. So,
well, you think about that statement of how much healthcare does influence everybody's lives and their decisions in so many ways, where they work, what they do. And
right.
I think that's, you know, we need to be mindful of that. I once saw a chart that said, I think it was of the US consumer, their greatest concerns. And there were basic things on there like being able to provide food, housing, shelter, but the greatest concern was around healthcare and being able to pay for it. And you say, man, that's just, you know, quite a statement of the world we live in right now.
Yeah, especially for us parents, right? Like that yes. is one of our priorities. It's like, it's my child taken care of.
Yes, exactly.
Now, Amanda, let's shift gears because I want to dive deeper into your career path.
Sure.
And your experience has been at the intersection of healthcare and technology. And mm-hmm. I'm curious, what brought you to this specific career path? And what? Let's start there.
Well, it's been quite a journey and maybe a slightly unconventional one. So I actually started out in management consulting straight out of undergrad. And it was one of those decisions. I remember at the time I was kind of, I don't know what I'm going to go do. So I'm going to go do management consulting so I can do a whole bunch of things.
That's great.
Exactly. And so I spent almost a decade at McKinsey doing management consulting. I focused in on consumer and retail. And I just look at that in the phase of my life that I really learned how to break down problems, think analytically, communicate, you know, skills that just wherever you go professionally and even personally are so incredibly valuable. And then from there, I decided to make a jump into private equity on the operating side. So I worked at Bain Capital for the next decade. And my job there was to spend probably about 80% of my time at any given moment with one company that Bain Capital had just acquired. So really in that first 2 years of what is critical transformation during the private equity ownership, almost becoming a de facto member of the management team to help drive that. And that's where I really started to get into first technology. So working across several of the technology investments at Bain Capital. And then about 5 years ago into healthcare, doing that with some of our healthcare IT companies. So that was the path that actually led me to work with Zelos. Zelos became the investment that when Bain Capital invested in it 2.5 years ago, I was the operating partner. And so I spent 80% of my time with this company that I really grew to just love, and this team that I grew to love. And I spent some time interim running the company. I stepped back into my old role at Bain Capital. And then the opportunity came of, well, gosh, Amanda, how would you feel about jumping over and becoming the full-time CEO of Zelos? And it was just one of those opportunities that, you know, I never saw coming, but when it came, it was one of those, I can't say no to this. This is, you know, this is really exciting and fun. And again, just a team and a company that I love dearly and, you know, so want to be successful. And I'm honored to get to be part of making the company successful. But anyway, to wind up that answer, it's been a long and winding path. And had you told me, you know, 20 years ago, 10 years ago, even 2 years ago, this is where I'd be, I would have said, oh, that's interesting.
I love it. Right? And I, a couple of things here. The first one is the Steve Jobs quote where he says, you can only connect the dots looking backward. And the older I get, the more true that quote becomes. And it's just, it's crazy, right? Same with me in my particular career path. If someone had told me that I was going to be where I am today, I was like, what? No way.
Yeah.
And another point that I wanted to highlight from your story is the fact that you got the opportunity to work with Zelos as a consultant, getting to know the team, getting to know more about the mission, the vision, the goals, the operations, helping them scale and grow. And that eventually led you to become the CEO, right? And I think there's something there to be said that this framework can be replicated to any other career, any other job, right? For example, let's say someone wants to work at X company and they might not be a position open up for a full-time role, or they might not be having all the qualifications. Starting as a consultant can actually be the better path, right? And a way to get your foot in the door. Go ahead.
I think that's true. I think there's lots of different ways in, and there's lots of different paths to wherever you want to go. And I say that with if you know where you want to go, and if you don't know where you want to go, I think that's fine too. I've always kind of taken this, you know, take the best door open approach to my career, and it's led to really interesting places. I think that's fine. I sometimes hear, you know, younger people be stressed about, well, I don't know exactly what I'm going to do or my career path. And I say, well, do you know what you're going to do for the next few years? And are you challenged and stretched and feeling like you're, moving forward? If the answer is yes, I think that's okay. Particularly in this environment, I think between consulting and different, approaches with companies, there's lots of paths there. And certainly something like working in a private equity firm as a path to becoming a CEO, it's a different path. So am I as deeply grounded in operations as somebody who had spent the last 20 years, working their way up through a company? No, I'm not. But am I deeply grounded in how you transform a business, how you transform a P&L, how you hire and bring a team together, how you think about a company from an investor perspective? Yes, I've had, incredible training in doing that. And so, I'd say, look at it and say there's different skill sets you can gather them, and, they will lead you on an interesting path.
100%. I agree with that. Was there ever, in your career path so far, was there ever a fork on the road where had you taken the opposite turn, would that led you to a completely different career path? Did you ever have that moment in your career? If so, tell us more about that. What was your state of mind back there, and what was the moment like for you?
Sure. I mean, there's been multiple. I think my business school application was about how I wanted to run a nonprofit, that was what I wanted to do. And I actually spent my summer of, I spent the year before I went to business school at McKinsey, I spent in the nonprofit practice. And then I spent my summer of business school working for Chicago Public Schools. And it was an incredible experience. But what it highlighted to me at the time, I remember thinking, okay, I'm not sure that I'm going to completely stretch and grow if I come into a nonprofit at this stage. Just for me, it didn't feel like the right fit. Mm-hmm. And so that was part of the journey back to, I'm going to stay in the for-profit world, but I'm going to find different ways to contribute and do that. So, I now sit on two nonprofit boards and I chair one of them. And who knows, maybe someday I will come back to say, okay, after this chapter, I want to go do that. But I say that from a perspective of there's forks in the road, but I think it's not I don't look at it as a left or a right turn. I look at it as a different lens on the glasses that says, well, maybe the way that I thought about doing that before isn't the right path, but I can I can achieve the spirit of it in a different way.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Because sometimes we don't even know if it's the right turn, right? We're just following our intuition, our gut, hopefully leads us somewhere.
Well, and someone also said to me when I was deciding whether or not to take this job, actually, and I was sharing some of the things that concerned me about stepping into this role. And they said, look, Amanda, you have to recognize that any career decision, you're probably making a 5 to 10 year career decision, but recognize you are not making the decision of what you are going to do from now until the day you die. And if you look at it that way, you're never going to make any decisions in your life.
That's true.
So I think it is good advice as well to say, let's break this down into chapters. And I do think, when you make these decisions, particularly when you're making a decision like this to lead a company, you have to be committed to it for a good duration, because it's the right thing for the business and for the team, but you're not committing your entire life to it.
That is so true. Thank you for saying that, because sometimes even myself, I've thought that this decision is like final, it's for life. But I realized that no, like you can pivot at any point, right? There are some exceptions, of course. Like people say, death and taxes.
Yes. Right? Not getting away from those.
Right. Awesome. So I want to zoom in a little bit into your CEO role. And first question I have is, you know, taking that leap, you know, from consulting to CEO, you know, what were some of the, I guess, unexpected things that you discovered that you were not anticipating? And also, some of the trade-offs, right? Like, because from going from consultant to CEO, I'm sure there's a big shift. So I just want to talk about that a little bit.
Sure. You know, I was sharing this with a client actually a little while back. One of the biggest changes for me in this role as an operator is I typically wake up any Monday now and say there's somewhere between 20 and 50% of my time that's going to be spent on things that surprise me that I actually don't know about today. And I think that's particularly true in healthcare, which is pretty dynamic, particularly with some of the regulations. But it's true of any operations, if things happen and you can't anticipate all of them. And I've started to more think about it as what I can anticipate and what I need to plan for is the mind share and the buffer space to be able to work through them. Because that, you know, so much of this to me is creating a system of how does this work? How do I work? How do I do this in a way that is sustainable? You know, the reality of my job at Bain Capital was, and my job as a consultant was, I could step out of it because, you know, at the end of the day, you could plan ahead and say, I'm going to be gone for a week or 2 weeks, or I'm going to go on maternity leave for 5 months, and that's okay. I can plan around it because I'm not operating and running the business. And so that's been a shift for me in this role of the, okay, at the end of the day, you are the chief decision maker and things happen. And so how do you pace it so that it's a, you know, sustainable marathon as opposed to a sprint where you're constantly, you know, chasing your tail?
Yes, I love that. I'm curious, what's on your family side, on your personal side, you know, how has this impacted if anything at all,
it's definitely been an adjustment. I'm really, really lucky to have a husband who is so incredibly supportive. And when I, you know, stepped into this role, said, I get it. I'm going to have to take on more of the parenting and adjust and, you know, work our family schedule around you. And so that's, you know, that is part of what has really helped through this transition. I struggle to answer this question a little bit because I do reflect on the fact that I've made this transition and taken over during COVID. And so it's hard for me at times to parse the difference between what's just kind of a little nutty and crazy right now because of the world we live in with so many disruptions around childcare and school and, you know, everything we all live every day as parents, versus what are the, you know, the disruptions of the job. But yeah, it's definitely, you know, it's required a shift for us. And just like everything, I think when you shift in life requires more communication about, you know, what's working, what's not working, how do we balance through and how do we get help around us? Cause, you know, I think anytime you're doing this, we've got three young kids, you know, John and I parent them, but there's a lot of people that help too in making it all work. And, you know, that's what holds it together and being deliberate about that.
I like what you mentioned on communication, because that is the key to everything, making sure that you're on the same page. Communicate with your partner, like, hey, this is not working, or I feel X, I need help here. Which personally, I struggle with that. I like to think that, you know, I need to do everything, but that's impossible, right?
It is definitely not possible to do everything. And I think if that's your bar, where that's your family's bar, like, gosh, I can't even imagine. We would not be successful.
it's crazy. What advice would you have to women in our audience that might want to step into a leadership role, but there's fear or doubt in their head, right? It's especially if by taking that leap, they might become the only woman in the room in that leadership role. Like, what advice would you have for just women?
Well, my first advice would be just go for it. Jump in. I do look at it and I say, well, gosh, if you don't, then, you know, if you were going to be the only woman in the room and you don't, then there's not going to be a woman in the room. And that's not a good answer. So jump in and figure it out. I'm just such a big believer that every room is so much better with diversity, and diversity of all sorts, not just gender. But I tend to look at it as like, okay, it is those of us who want to do this, it's our obligation to jump in and, you know, work through the, you know, at times uncomfortable situations. I laugh about my lack of sporting knowledge in a number of conversations where I've just sat there and been like, you have to forgive me, but like, you're going to need to explain the most basic thing if I'm going to join this conversation.
I love
that's it. Okay. That's just, you know, I think you just have to be comfortable in your own skin and have some fun with it.
What are your recommendations or what is your system or process in either getting feedback from your team or
yeah,
receiving feedback? What are some of the things that we should consider?
Yeah. So I try to be really deliberate about it. And that probably goes to my, you know, roots of getting trained at McKinsey, where feedback is, you know, so it's just, it is a, you know, part of the system and how it works, quite literally, how often you ask for it, give it, how you give feedback. But that's the culture I grew up in. And so I try to create the same. So for me personally, I have a CEO coach, and I ask her regularly. She's actually going through it now to solicit feedback from my team, from members of my board, and bring that back to me. And I do that because I find that sometimes, and it's totally natural, but sometimes people aren't, you know, totally honest with the CEO face to face about,
right.
you know, they're often honest about what's working. They're not always honest about what's not working. And I want to hear that and gather that. And I want to gather it in a way, though, that I can also digest it. And so that's part of the asking somebody to do a little bit of the legwork and say, talk to multiple people and bring me back the themes, help me cut through the noise so I can figure out what to do differently. And then I do the same with my team. We're going through a process right now where everyone on my team, I had submit feedback about each other, and I've worked through feedback for them. And actually it's next week that I sit down with every person to share back the themes of that. And I like to try to do it in the context of, anybody who's on my team is on my team and there for a reason, because I think they are a critical part of what will make them successful, make us successful. And I say that from a perspective of just inherently, then there is so much good about that person. And I want them to hear and see that feedback. And I think we all, you know, in particular right now, when we're operating in the Zoom world, really, really need that. Not that we don't always need that as humans, but right now. And then also try to focus folks in on, if I can only give you one piece of advice, or if your teammates can only give you one piece of advice, here's what it is. Because I think in that feedback, you know, humans, if you hear five things, you shut off. But if you hear one thing to say, you know, I hear that and I can work on that. And, you know, that's the way that we all get better.
100% agree with that. It's the only way to get better. It's the only way to build trust within the team too. And something interesting that you mentioned too is the fact that you have a coach. Do you think CEOs should invest in having a coach? Like, you know, it's I guess the question is, I haven't heard many CEOs talk about having a coach, but I think, you know, just like in sports, right? I think having a coach can really help you level up your game.
I think it's so incredibly valuable. I would almost go, I think I'd be irresponsible with myself right now if I didn't have one.
I love it.
From a perspective of having, I look forward to my regular touch points with her as a chance to really pull up and reflect. And that's another hard part of the job at the pace that, you know, you move. Having that time that is just to pull up and reflect about how are you doing as an individual, how are you doing as a leader, and how is the team receiving that is just incredibly valuable. So yes, I would be a big advocate. And it was one of the things that I learned at Bain Capital of, you know, we gave almost all of our CEOs there, a coach with that attitude of from day one, not a, gosh, you're not doing well, let us get you a coach to help. More from a perspective of, this is a really, really hard thing that you're doing and want to make sure that you are fully supported in doing it.
What are some of the systems and processes that you have implemented to ensure that you bring on the right teammates for the term?
So I'm a big believer in putting process and structure around hiring to do it well. And so I'll start with, to me, number one is making sure you've got the right spec and the right job position. So before even going out to hire, spending a lot of time on being crystal clear on what's the role and who are we looking for, both in their skills and experience and just in the person and how they operate. So starting with that alignment across myself, and typically, you know, if I'm hiring a direct report, it's with the board or it's with some of the key peers that this person will be interacting with. So spending a bunch of time on that before, you know, even getting up and going and aligning with the search firm on it. And then second, using a lot of different ways to evaluate candidates. So, interviews are obviously quite common. We, like everyone else, do them, have an interview panel so that it's not just one point of view, but multiple. And when we're doing assessments on those interviews, tracking it back to the scorecard of what are we looking for. And ideally, you know, for the key things that we're looking for, assigning out to people, okay, so-and-so dig here, so-and-so dig here, so we can really come with, you know, clarity of thought of how does that person line up. We then use assessments. So for anybody that's in the C-suite going through a, you know, 4-hour assessment to understand how they tick, how they work, and stacking that up against all of our assessments. So everybody that's been on my team has gone through that, so we can get it not just profile the individual, but how will they fit in the team. And then finally, we do a lot of blind referencing. So, you know, I think referencing is so important, but a lot of times people say, well, let me ask the candidate for 3 references, as opposed to saying, I'm going to take the time to go out and do blind referencing and to call people. You know, it's pretty easy now to go through LinkedIn in the past and use connections to find folks that have worked with people to get the real read. And so all of that, you know, goes into hiring at Zelus to make sure that we've got the right leaders, because there is nothing that is more damaging than bringing the wrong person on, having to go through that, put the team through that, make that decision, bring on someone new. So I'm a big believer in, you know, invest in getting the right people on the team.
Well, Amanda, it's been an amazing episode, and I always like to ask all of my guests, how do you stay sharp with your skill sets, right? And what are some of the either books or courses or anything that you do to stay sharp with your skill sets, right? What are some of the investments of time that you're making right now?
So I typically will either read short articles, honestly, things like I find, you know, Fast Company and Inc. have a bunch of really interesting articles that are just great, you know, 2 minute. Oh, that's a great reminder to think about that, to do that. I also am a big believer in listening to podcasts. So we had a couple hours in the car this morning and I was listening to a Freakonomics podcast that I think I will be forwarding out to my team about the origins of meetings and how you make meetings more efficient.
Oh my God. I love that.
It's one of those things of like, gosh, how can you make a team happier? Focus on meetings.
It's true.
And then a lot of it is a network of mentors that I go to and try to be proactive about when I'm feeling off on something or uncertain, going to them with people who have been there, who have done it, who have led companies, who have, you know, led companies for decades, and who know me. And so that's often the most valuable. But I think just the notion of saying pick up your head and look around and have other things help guide you is the really important one.
I love that. And last question, I promise,
sure,
wrap it up. What will be your number one takeaway, especially for our women in the C-suite listening? What will be your one piece of advice, recommendation as they either step into a CEO role or as they continue, in their CEO role?
My number one piece of advice right now, and again, I think it's influenced by COVID, is have compassion for yourself and take care of yourself. Mm-hmm. It is a marathon and not a sprint. And, you know, I always tell my team with regard to their teams, you got to put on your airbag before, sorry, not your airbag. They laugh when I say that too. Put on your air mask. Don't put on your airbag. Put on your air mask before you open.
I love it.
I think it's true of the CEO too. And this is, you know, these are crazy times to lead.
Crazy.
So having that mindset, I think, is really important to succeed.
Amanda, thank you so much for joining us. And where can, if people wanted to reach out to you or find out more about your work, what's the best way to reach out to you?
They can go to zealous.com or LinkedIn and find me.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for coming on the show to Ivy Podcast and sharing more about your background and especially for women in the C-suite, right? How they can continue on this CEO path. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks, Caesar. Enjoyed it.
Thanks so much.
Thank you for listening to the Ivy Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our RSS feed on ivypodcast.com and all major podcasting platforms like Spotify and iTunes. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a rating on iTunes.